What were you doing before you kicked off the Vinnie Eastwood show, and how did you go from doing that to doing what you're doing now?
Well, my first job, my mum wouldn't let me get a job during high school for some reason, was to direct, produce, promote, and put on my own play, which was really critically acclaimed, and I got enough money to go down to university. When I got to university, suddenly with no support network around me, girlfriend left, flatmate was basically mooching off me, $3,000 down the drain or something like that. I started dealing cannabis because I was really lonely, and
you're really lonely.
People,
I need
people,
friends.
People came round and that kind of thing, and I got arrested for it. Somebody dubbed me in, and I told the police everything. You know, I totally confessed. They said, "Yes, I've been dealing for 8 months. I've been selling about an ounce a week or whatever," and then they still made up evidence. And it was the most traumatic time of my life, and I'll never forget that, how I thought at the time that police were honest, decent people who were just trying to do right by everybody in general. But the reality is they just treated me like I was trash and lied all the time. And that really woke me up to how the world really works. And I went to uni back up in Auckland. About a year or so later, I had to do 300 hours community service for possession of 13 grams of cannabis. And the guy in front of me was up for sexual assault, growing 5 plants, and resisting arrest. He got 150 hours community service. Explain that one to me. And I became a telesalesman. This friend of my brother's told me that I'd be really good at it. And I was. I got up to basically the top form of the company for my my last 6 months there, doing residential phone sales over the phone. You know, just telling people, you know, a competitor to Telecom. So you know how loyal people are to Telecom. I had a 50% strike rate. So for every second person that picked up that phone, I could get them to switch from Telecom to something that's a New Zealand-owned company instead. And then I got promoted, and I told them that I'm done doing sales. I've reached the top of that game. I want to do something else. I want to help people. I want to do but they gave me the job as business account manager, for which they gave me no business accounts to manage, because that wasn't what a business account manager was. Mm. A business account manager was simply business telesales. And so I got bored, and I wrote a 7-page essay about what was wrong with the company. All their training protocols, all their programs, faults, how to increase staff retention, how to give people something to do during breaks instead of just smoking cigarettes, and so on and so forth. And so, yeah, we had a big meeting with all the business account managers and the second in charge of the company. And then after about 12 minutes, his phone rings and he goes, "Okay, I'm sorry, I've got to go," after we get halfway through page 2. And then I email him a couple of days later and say, "Hey, what's going on, you know?" Because all the other business account managers and basically anybody else in the company was full on agreeing with me, because these were real obvious glaring problems. And so they said, "As far as I'm concerned, the matter is closed." And then a couple of days later, my boss comes up to me and he says, "You know, Vinny, come and have a coffee next door." And I'm like, "Yeah, sweet ass, I need a coffee." And he sits me down at the cafe, slaps a piece of paper down, and he says, "Sign it." I go, "What am I signing?" He says, "Well, we're going to give you 6 weeks' pay if you'll leave." And I mean, what? Leave, like, right now? And he's like, "Yeah, in the next 5 minutes." And to never tell people this company that I was working for. And you know what, Ben, I hadn't had a summer holiday for quite a long time, so I took the $3,000 and I had a summer holiday off. And the money started to run out. And so I got another telesales job. And they started promoting me like fucking nobody's business. And then it turns out that these people were only paying me about 5% of what they should have. They were taking all the sales and everything like that that Vodafone was subcontracting on to them, and keeping the bulk of it for themselves, and leaving all of us out. I was actually paying to work at the end of the day. I had to pay for my own phone, my own car, and stuff like that. They sent me out on the roads and everything, driving out to Otahuhu or Albany from Mount Eden and stuff like that. And with the oil prices the way they were, it's just ridiculous. I was paying about maybe $80 a week to work. And I was getting into debt, and I go into the boss and I say, "Look, I can't keep working here unless you pay me more." And they go, "Oh, well, you think you got us over a barrel?" And, it's just, and so naturally, they decided that they would tell us to do a hell of a lot more work by entering in all the data which they were supposed to be taking care of and not pay us anymore. So most of the people left the company at that point and formed a couple of the people there, some of the top salespeople, myself included, became part of a new company run by a real psycho. And what I noticed, and I think this was my last day, is that I was starting to listen to Alex Jones a lot and watching kind of like two documentaries a day sort of thing for about 6 months. So I had this geometric shift in my perception of reality. And I was getting really depressed. I was getting really angry. I couldn't go to work any day without getting high first. I was just absolutely dependent on it. I was just really, I was really in a bad place. And it wasn't because I wasn't earning money. It was because I knew that I wasn't contributing anything good to society. And it was really irking on me because I started to see the monumental problems that we had. And I didn't think that doing telesales for a Vodafone subsidiary was going to cut it. So I quit. I called my friend John Eisen from Uncensored Magazine, uncensored.co.nz. And I said, you know, John, I feel like I really want to quit. And he asked me one question. I'll never forget this. He says, does it feel right? I said, yeah. Yeah, it does feel right. So I quit. I took my money. Last paycheck for the month was $4,000 plus $11,900 worth of Westfield shopping vouchers that was done. So, you know, I walked away from a job where my last paycheck for a month was like $15,000, okay? And I bought myself a computer, I bought myself a camera, and I went about trying to, you know, get out to protest public meetings, filming them, editing them, no training, no nothing. You just look at a person who's speaking at a protest, person with a megaphone, person with a microphone. Those are the people you go and talk to. The news doesn't talk to those people.
Yeah.
Excuse me, is there anybody with a really unkempt beard and a moth-eaten jersey around? Oh, we'll interview that person. You know, that's basically how it happened. So as a result of doing this and speaking to these people, I realized they had a hell of a lot of knowledge, like huge quantities of knowledge. And it's been a struggle, you know, like over the years trying to just, you know, eke out a living. I did dance party videos for a bit, and eventually this has just become full-time. I've got a five-day-a-week radio show. I'm in one of the top million websites in the year just for my in the world just for my website alone. I have more YouTube subscribers than any mainstream media news channel in New Zealand. In fact, most of them you could combine together and I'd still be beating them. I am a celebrity now. When I go to protest, there's about 10% of the people who know me. Two people gave me a $100 note each at the protest yesterday just to thank me for who I am and what I do. And I'm completely and utterly listener-supported because I don't know about you, bro, but I'm done being a salesman, you know?
I ain't selling anything anymore.
I'm going to give people what they need, and what they need is the truth, because we need to suffer. That's what my main conclusion is about this.
Without
suffering, without sacrifice, we don't learn anything worth learning.
Well, you know, just sort of, you know, whimsically, you know, I do wonder about that sometimes in terms of, I look at my grandfather's generation and, you know, they do seem to have a little bit more endurance and a little bit more kind of sticking with it than this generation does. And I think it is because they did go through some pretty hard times and they learnt the value of what, you know, whereas sometimes the generation that I'm part of and you are and the ones beneath us, we're in our little bubble and we don't really challenge it too much because at the end of the day we've got our iPods, we've got our Facebook, we've got all our toys, and it's not until those things start disappearing and food, you know, vanishes off the table that I think a lot of people will really start to realise, you know, that things aren't as peachy as they first thought they were.
Well, you know, just looking around me right now, I've got a 27-inch quad-core iMac. I've got a printer that can print DVDs and scan stuff. I've got a, what's this? I think a 72-inch LCD screen. I've got a 100-watt megaphone. I've got a four-channel stereo condenser mic that plugs into the computer via USB. I've got wireless microphones to capture crystal clear audio quality sound from 50 meters away. I've got a camera that is about the size of an iPhone that shoots in full HD and has a audio jack input. Another GoPro camera, which I've got with a shoulder mount, and a number of other accessories like an LCD screen and a mic output. I've got a lighting display with four of the most gargantuan freaking energy saver bulbs that you've ever seen. It's ironic, isn't it? And I've got banners all over the place that are really well printed, like on canvas and backed by Core Flute. Everything that I have has been given to me. No, seriously, everything that I just listed there.
Yeah, wow.
Has been donated by a listener, like one of the people who might be listening to this show. Okay? There's only one reason why people would act with such generosity.
Because they care.
They care, okay? And that is what I have found out is the real key here. If you care, people start to care about you. If you give a crap about the issues, then suddenly people, other people start to care about them too. You know, it's a reciprocal thing. And I don't let people down, invariably. I work harder than anybody else. I really do go to these public meetings. And now I'm shooting with two camera angles so that when you're watching those videos with Kim.com doing his speeches and stuff like that, it's cutting between them. It's a hell of a lot of work. And I'm not done yet. I still haven't archived my shows. I need help at this point because I think I might have been bitten off more than I can chew. I mean, if you can name me one person anywhere in the world who's gotten as much accomplished as I have by themselves, you know, point them out. I don't think they exist.
Well, I can't speak for the world, but, you know, within New Zealand, you know, what you have done in a short time is pretty bloody amazing. And, you know, again, it's sort of, you know, a thought went through my head was relating to the whole issue of you know, when the TVNZ cameras or the ODT or, in your case, New Zealand Herald turn up for a protest. Even though you've got all of those statistics behind you, I'm pretty damn certain they won't come up and ask you a question. And likewise, you know, down here in Dunedin, we have a gentleman called Karen Tass, who very much a prominent person in the activism movement, was one of the leading spokesmen of the Occupy movement. Now, Karen is a person that has worked in the finance industry for over 20 years. He knows his material. Yet when they have the Occupy, the ODT reporting on the Occupy movement, they don't go and talk to Karen, even though he's one of these spokespeople. They go and talk to the crazy cat lady.
Yeah, and Ian Wishart had him on my show.
Lucky you.
it was really hard to get him, and I haven't been able to really get a hold of him for over 2 years.
Yeah.
I wish that wasn't the case, but he told me something that the media is the fourth estate.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're supposed to be here to keep check on the people in power. Those people can actually do a lot of damage, you know. One irresponsible person who is uneducated, has no money in their pocket or anything like that, they might assault somebody at a bar or something.
Yeah.
They can do that much damage to society. These other people that are not being reported on, they can destroy nations in moments.